Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that?
Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. Create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents.
Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the very first episode of the Non-Aggressive Parenting Podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Melissa Rakovich from Washington State, and you can find some of her posting on Anarchista Musings and The Voluntary Agrarian. And you can also follow her on Twitter at Mama Anarchist. And so we're going to discuss, this is the very first pilot episode of this new podcast, and we're going to focus a lot about peaceful parenting. I guess attachment parenting, you know, teaching kids how to reason and concepts such as self-ownership, property rights, non-aggression, you know, really radical, revolutionary type comment, revolutionary things that only a crazy anarchist would teach the kids. And so this is going to be just, you know, a basic episode to get to know where we're coming from, an introduction and background, how we both got to this crazy idea of treating your kids like they're their own human beings, and a little fun haircut story that both of our one of our kids experienced. It's kind of interesting and kind of leads into the idea of self ownership and body integrity and respecting others. So awesome, Melissa! I'm so happy to do this with you. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Neil. I'm excited. It's about time, right?
I know, right? We've been trying to plan this for a long time, and things happen, life happens, and we finally got it going, though. So maybe why don't you go first and just talk about why you think peaceful parenting, you know, reasoning with your children, teaching them compassion, teaching them why is this even a question, you know? You know, why, what made you think that these revolutionary concepts are important to teach our kids?
Why do I have to explain this? quite the concept. Well, you know, that's the thing, is that statism can start at home, you know, and if you teach your children, or if you assert your authority over them, then they're going to learn that they have to ask for permission, that everything's ruled around them, and that everything that they want to do has to go through some sort of authority figure, you know. And to me, that's just counterintuitive. Like, when I watch my children play, I'm not going to dictate everything that they're doing, and I just let them do what they're doing, you know, and that allows for their creativity. It allows for them to just be autonomous and learn their own way of life and do it naturally, you know, and that just makes things a lot easier when you lay off and you just allow your children to be, as long as they're not going to harm themselves, clearly. But for the most part, you know, I think it's important to teach children that they are autonomous, that they're their own person, and that they are able to make their own decisions. You know, as parents, guiding them through that so that, okay, we can do that, or maybe that's not the best idea to go into the street. Let's try a different route, you know. But I believe if you give your children a lot of respect to their decisions, they become a lot more independent at an earlier age, and they're able to rely on themselves and believe in themselves.
Yes, yes. And well, let me give you a little bit of my background. Actually, before I do that, I just want to say that the Non-Aggressive Parenting Podcast is covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. This allows for reuse by anyone except for governments and the agents thereof. You can find out more information for this at BIPCOT.org. So my background, I wouldn't say I had a particularly authoritarian or violent background. I mean, there was a little bit of, you know, corporal punishment, just a little, but still, I you know, grew up kind of not accepting that, and you know, in high school, being, you know, an independent person, not willing to stand with the crowd so much, you know. I wanted to isolate myself, and so maybe a little bit of rebellious, but not as much as others. But yeah, then before becoming a parent, it's kind of interesting. I remember talking with my wife. I remember having a conversation with her, and we said, I asked her, so if our kid is bad, we're going to spank them, right? And she's like, yeah, why not? You know, you were spanked, I was spanked, what's the big deal? And so we didn't think anything of it. Yeah, we didn't think, yeah, right, you turned out okay. So we didn't think anything of it. And then when my son came, you know, as a first child, you know, you don't know exactly what to do. You're like reading books and, you know, looking at videos and trying to find out information. How do other people do it? And at first you're like, all right, let me just, you know, have my parents give me advice because, you know, they raise kids. But then a couple of months later, my wife sent me a video from Stefan Molyneux. I think it's called 7 Reasons Not to Spank Your Children. Mm-hmm. And that started me on my journey of Stefan Molyneux and all of his other videos about, you know, voluntarism and anarchy and free markets and economics and all that fun stuff. But yeah, he's really big onto the peaceful parenting. And I really, really took it to heart. I really absorbed it. I thought it made sense. The arguments against spanking are just rock solid. You know, you can't absolutely. You can't really defend it without committing a logical fallacy of one sort or another, right?
Right.
And so it's very interesting you know, to me it seems like, oh, what a coincidence, you know, peace and prosperity occurs when there's less of the state, you know, less regulation, less laws, less taxes, you know, there's more peace and prosperity. Oh, look at that. Children grow up much more healthy and vibrant and robust when they're treated with respect. Huh. Isn't that an interesting coincidence?
Absolutely. It's not hard to follow that, you know, it's right there.
Right, right. So, so that was one thing. And then another thing you said was, it brought to mind how so many people say, you know, parenting is so exhausting. And one of the reasons that it's exhausting for a lot of people when I ask them is because they're like, you know, I got to watch my kid. They can't do this. They can't do that. You know, you got to control them every which way. And you know, as someone who strives to being a peaceful parent, you know, especially when you have young kids, right? You know, you just make sure they don't get hurt, they don't run in the street, you know, they don't do obvious things like that. But then beyond that, you know, you allow them to explore, you allow them to fall and make mistakes, and you know, it's like, or even, you know, things that most parents would consider unheard of, like learning how to use a knife, or learning right. how to respect fire, or, you know, my kids, I have them chop vegetables for me when I'm cooking. They love to help me make guacamole. My wife too, when she's making, like, I don't know, chili, they chop the onions. Actually, my daughter loves raw onions, yeah, by the way. Interesting.
Given her spirit, I'm not surprised.
I know. But yeah, so I thought that was interesting that people who say that parenting is exhausting are most often the types of people that are so, so authoritarian. They believe they have to be controlling everything. And that is exhausting. If you think about it, that's very exhausting, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it is, you know, even for me, and maybe because I'm a single mom, but it is exhausting still, but it's got to be, I can't imagine if I was putting so much effort into controlling their every move or their every action, or, you know, or dictating what's allowed and what's not with whatever they do, which is a lot because, you know, 2 and 4 years old, they're constantly into things. They're constantly figuring things out. And if I'm there to manipulate that at all times, I think I wouldn't make it, you know? So, it's still tiring, but it's doable, you know, and it's easier. It's a lot easier, you know? So,
you know, there's an interesting idea I just thought of, that, when you're out in the, when I'm out in the public with my kids, other people, the other adults look at my kids, sometimes they smile and say, oh, that's so cute, because my kids are so independent, and they just, you know, they're very genuine and sincere. They're not afraid of acting a certain way around adults, and so they're, you know, they're themselves. They're free to be themselves.
Absolutely,
whereas
yeah.
other kids who are really obedient and listen to every single thing their parents say and are careful not to step out of line, it's kind of funny. Those kids don't often get that reaction from those adults. They don't say, oh, that's so cute. Look, your son is so obedient and quiet.
Right, right, exactly.
So they appreciate the independence and individuality of free, children.
Right. Well, and to me, you see, like, those children, they exhibit a stronger spirit. They're more sure of themselves. Like, my children will go up and walk right up to other kids and play. And I notice other children sometimes will be like, look at their parents, like, is it okay if I play with this little kid? Like, you know, and I just, yeah, go. You want to go invite her to go play? Do it. Go for it. You know, and I don't even, and I encourage it. You know, or my kids, you know, they'll run around and they'll fall and I don't even notice it. And my kids get right back up and they run around. And I have had parents come up to me and they're like, I can't believe your kids didn't make a sound. Like, I can't believe they weren't freaking out. And I'm like, it's because I let my kids fall so they know how to get back up, you know? Right. And, you know, I mean, of course, like I don't let them fall from two stories, you know, or, and if they are crying and they need my help, I'm right there. But for the most part, I just wait to see what the reaction is. And then I move accordingly, you know, and that's given them a lot of, confidence in themselves as well. And I get that too. When I take my kids out and about, people are just, they're amazed at how, my kids are they're able to carry on a conversation with adults. And almost as if they're equals, you know, like they'll just have a full on conversation with them. And people always compliment me on that. And, you know, and I'm like, well, it's 'cause that's how I talk to them. You know, I don't talk down at them. I don't use baby words. Never did. Like, I've always talked to them as if, they were another person I respect, because I do. I don't pull the mom card, you know, like I try to just like keep them safe. That's my goal. And also guide them through life and show them, well, this is how I live. This is what I do. And if you want people to respond to you or respect you, you got to give respect back and that sort of thing. And you know, for the most part, they pick that up intuitively. Like, they know that, you know, they know to treat people nicely. I don't have to tell them, well, you have to be nice. Like, they know that. They know the response that gets, especially when they fight between the two of them, you know, like, they know it works if they're nice to each other versus when they're fighting, you know, so.
Yeah, I feel like when parents use the card of, you know, the mom card or the dad card, like, you know, you know, listen to me, and they say, why? Because I'm your mother. I feel like that's a cop out. It's basically saying I've run out of reasons, and I can't give you another reason, so I'm just gonna do the authority reason. And that's so sad. You know, it's really sad when parents do that. And I don't know if I do that at all. I try really hard not to. And also another thing is I like to explain as much as possible, explain why you want them to do something or why not to do something, right?
Right.
And, you know, even if you don't think that they'll understand your explanation, still explain it to them, because how do you think they're going to understand your explanations if you're not explaining things to them?
Right. Exactly. Well, and then you don't want to teach them that just because someone said so, you go along with it. I mean, that's right. The problem with statism, right? Like, the ultimate because I said so is the state. You know what I mean? And that's something my mom used to do all the time. I would ask her something and she'd say, well, because I said so. End of conversation. You don't get to ask any more questions. And I remember being frustrated because it didn't make any sense to me. Like, well, but then who are you? Like, why do you get to say so, you know? Kids, they're constantly learning. They're sponges. They're constantly picking things up. They're trying to figure out the world. And that's your role. Your role is to explain it. Your role is to guide them and show them, you know? So, you know, to say I said so or because I'm the mom, or it is a cop out, you know, and that's disrespectful to me. So,
yeah. Yeah. And the other thing I try to do a lot is, if I'm in the wrong, you know, I try to apologize to them and, you know, say, sorry. I think that's another thing that a lot of parents don't do as often, because they don't want to seem imperfect or fallible to their kids. You know, they want to seem like they know it all. They got it together, you know, and, you know, basically I hear them say, you know, as a parent, you have to appear like the strong pillar. You know, you can't appear imperfect or weak, because then your child is going to be insecure, because they need to rely on you for everything, but they see that you're weak, or that you're talking to them or explaining things to them like they're an equal, and you're not an equal. You're an adult.
Right.
So I don't like that. Of course not. That's not my style at all. I talk to them as much as possible, and I say sorry when I've done something or when I've been corrected, maybe.
Absolutely.
And so I think that's very important, very empowering. And that's not showing weakness. I think it's showing character strength.
Absolutely. I do that with my children too. You know, like, you know what? I'm sorry. You know, like, I'll apologize and I'll talk them through it and explain it. And, you know, and doing that, what that does is show that no one's perfect. Nobody's perfect, you know, and they need to know that. And they need to know that people make mistakes, and also that it's important to own up to your mistakes, you know, and also the only way you're going to do anything really with your children is lead by example. You know, you can't tell them to do something and then do the opposite. They watch your actions more than anything. They pick up on actions more than anything. Your words are meaningless if you don't have the actions to back it up, which comes back to having principles and living by your principles, which is the whole reason for raising our children this way. We wouldn't want someone else treating us this way. We don't treat other people this way. Our children are no different. They're humans too. So we're going to give them the same respect. So, yeah, I often apologize because mom makes mistakes all the time. Yeah. So,
yeah. So on the topic of perceived mistakes and imperfections, so we have these haircut stories. So
we do.
Actually, you know what we should mention? The ages of our kids. So my son is 6 and my daughter's 4. But don't let the ages fool you. She's in control of that relationship. So why don't you start off with the haircut stories and the ages?
Yeah. Oh, so my son is 2.5 and my daughter's about 4.5. And actually I think our daughters are about a week apart in age. Which is funny because I was thinking about that with the haircut stories, you know, because you told me about your haircut story and a few weeks later, sure enough, my daughter does it. So I think it was yesterday. Talk about letting your kids use sharp objects. I let my daughter use scissors, you know, because she knows how to use them. And I've instructed her on how to keep safe with them. And she's just in the other room cutting up construction paper, working in crafts. And all of a sudden, it's so funny, my daughter, she walks by my bedroom and I'm studying and I'm getting stuff done. And while my son is sleeping, and she's like, "Mom, what do you think?" And she had this look on her face, and I look, and I couldn't tell because she has these long, beautiful, curly golden locks. But then she cut like just the first initial parts of it. And my first thought was, "Oh, here we go. Okay. What am I going to do? I just talked about this with Danilo. I don't have an issue with that. I shouldn't be freaking out about this. No, I'm not going to freak out about this. This is actually good. This is a step for her deciding what she wants in her life and taking action to do it. And she didn't ask anybody. So I called her into my room and I'm like, "Ro, I really like that. Do you like your haircut? Did you want to cut your hair?" Like, she's like, "Yeah, I want my hair short." And I said, "Okay. Do you want me to continue doing it? Because I can get the whole thing, you know, and I know how to cut hair." So I was like, "You want to sit down in my room and I can, you know, get your do a full on haircut?" And she was so excited. So excited. Like,
wow.
You know, it's like it was a really sweet bonding moment, you know, and I was sitting there cutting her hair, and this is her first haircut. So so she's had this really long hair, and I was so excited because it was like, it was amazing. It was amazing to see this little child just go, "You know what? I'm going to change something about my life and I'm going to do it." And then I saw an opportunity to respect her for that and not admonish her and not embarrass her over it. Cause that's something my parents would have done. That didn't make sense to me. I remember when I was a kid, I wanted to cut my hair and I did. It was a bad situation. You know, my parents were upset that I, you know, and I remember thinking, "But it's my hair. Why can't I cut my hair?" So anyhow, we cut her hair and she loves it and she's so excited and she keeps asking. And that was a couple days ago, I think 2 or 3 days ago. And she's like, "Has it grown back yet, Mom? Can we do another haircut?" And I'm like, "Well, it'll grow back, but it takes a little time." But yeah, I mean, she's been, and she goes around and she tells people too. She went to the park yesterday and she's like, "I cut my hair," you know, she's just proud. She's very proud of that decision. And I remember too, thinking to Danilo, as I was cutting her hair, that how wonderful of an opportunity to respect her in the situation. And it's not exhausting. Had I gotten upset, had I wanted to discipline her, had, you know, all those things that my parents would have done, it would have been exhausting and emotionally draining. And it would have caused some damage for her and it would have probably made her second guess the fact that she could make decisions. You know, that's my thinking. So, and then I thought of your story.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. So before I tell you about my kids, I just thought of something. I have a friend who has a 5-year-old boy, and this boy is he's pretty sensitive to touch. Like she says, she has a very hard time cutting his nails, washing him in the bathtub, soap, shampoo, all that. Very, very difficult. He just doesn't like to be touched. He's right. Very particular about that. And so hair also was very touchy for him, very sensitive. And so his hair became very long because she didn't want to force him. You know, she's kind of like us. Well, she's not an anarchist, but she's like us in that she understands how important it is to respect your children, their decisions, and what they want with their own body. And so she's like, all right. And so he grew his hair, like, around shoulder length, maybe a little bit past. And her family did not like it. Like, her aunts, uncles, her father, her grandmother, they didn't like it. Everyone's, like, encouraging it. But she's like, that's what he likes, and we're going to keep it. And then one day, her husband, I don't know what possessed him, but he cut his son's hair. I don't know if it was the shaver or something, but he really short, and his son was like crying. I don't know. Maybe his son didn't know what was happening. I don't know. But it was like traumatizing, very emotionally traumatizing. And she was like, "Why did you do that?" And he's like, "And I thought it would be fine. You just took a shower and everything." And so, he let it grow really long, but then eventually, you know, she would just bring it up occasionally. It's like, "You sure you don't want to cut your hair?" And he would say, "No." And then she would try again, you know, a couple months later. And then one time she asked him again, and he's like, "Yeah, I want to cut my hair." So right. He cut it really short, but this time no trauma.
Right.
Because
right.
He accepted it and he wanted it. And I thought that was a beautiful thing. And so yeah, it's just a wonderful thing when you, you know, when you really acknowledge your child's autonomy and self-ownership, and it's really beautiful. So my daughter, who was like around December 9 this year, when it was a birthday party and we were all downstairs, and then my daughter kind of disappeared. And yeah, my daughter uses scissors also. They, you know, like your daughter doing different crafts and everything, so they're pretty competent with scissors. So she found, oh yeah, my wife bought this special scissors though for cutting hair. That's right. So she got that, and she went upstairs and she got a stool because she can't even see over the counter herself. She got a stool and she proceeded to cut her hair. Nobody was there. And then my mother found her first. She went upstairs and she was like, I think she was like angry and in shock. No, what are you doing? You know, and she saw that, you know, she found it with like a big chunk of hair in her hand, and then there's also a lot of hair in the garbage. But she was going at it. She was enjoying herself, just cutting. And it's just an amazing thing that the kids, they don't feel the same kind of, I guess, social pressures that a lot of adults would feel, you know, just like cutting your hair yourself. You're like, oh no, what if I do a bad job? What if it's not even? What if
they're not even thinking about
they
that?
They
don't
care
right.
about that. And so she came down and we all, you know, nobody was really yelling at her, but I could sense I could see that my family members, they were not happy. They're like, that's nice, but you're not going to do it again, are you? You know, and then my wife's mother. She said kind of similar thing, but so she wasn't really happy. But my wife, she eventually, you know, my daughter Serena, she allowed my wife to shape it up, make it look nice. So it does look nice now. But yeah, similar sort of thing. You know, I was proud of her. I was saying, you know, I'm just happy that she made a decision on her own. I'm just proud that they can take matters into their own hands. And you know what? Like, your daughter asked that question, like, you know, did it grow back yet? So that's a lesson. They're learning about their body, how fast your hair grows, you know?
Right, exactly.
How permanent such a decision is, right?
Right, exactly.
So self-ownership is something that, you know, I guess we don't really learn as a concept, you know, as a child, and then later as a volunteer, and that because we learned that. But I think as peaceful parents, that's what we're trying to teach our kids, right? What is self-ownership? Even before they know that phrase, you know, I want them to be firmly understanding of that concept.
Right. Yeah. Well, actually, when my daughter, she was about 2 years old when my son was born, and I remember thinking, okay, there's going to come a time when they do the sibling thing and they are invading each other's space or, you know, wanting to manipulate each other or fight, you know. And I remember thinking, like, you know, when you're little, you're taught that you should, no, you can't touch them. No, don't do this. Don't do that. And I kept thinking, you know, there's got to be a way to integrate my principles as an anarchist, using self-ownership, what better way to teach children about self-ownership than, okay, personal space? You know, what does that look like? And so from the time that my daughter was two and my son was a newborn, I talked about self-ownership and I explained it in a way where it's like, you know, if my daughter is trying to manipulate my son, like, here, come over here. I want you to do this. And he's not happy with that. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. This doesn't work. You're violating his self-ownership. He's not happy with that. And, you know, he's autonomous, you're autonomous, you guys have your own self-ownership, you can protect that, you're responsible for that. And so it's funny, like they're already getting the voluntarious lingo, you know, like lingo, like they, you know, and of course they would, you know, and, my daughter would start calling it, I remember one time, my ex and was in the bathroom with her while she was washing her hands, and he was standing too close to the sink for her comfort or something. And she goes, "Dad, can I get some self-owner space over here?" You know, like she was like, "You need to go away," you know? And then, or she'll yell at her brother and say, "Kenan, I want my space ownership," you know, like, so, and then, the other day, it was a couple weeks ago, my son, he hasn't really said those words yet, but they were in the car and, you know, they were fighting and he's touching me, she's touching me. And my son all out of the blue goes, "Ro, ownership." And like, and she stopped, like she knew, but like, that was the first time she said that. And it was like, I was so proud. Like, great. Yes. Grow up with that. Like that's, you know, that's something you should know. And so, I introduced it to my kids early on as a way to explain, you know, personal space and, you know, as they get older and as we, as, voluntarists try to create a world where, people are aware what self-ownership is or are aware of what anarchist principles are, they will step into a world that we're creating and it won't be new to them, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
Oh yeah. They're going to be the ones to definitely, be the bricks, you know, to create this new world. And it's going to be beautiful. I think it's going to be beautiful. You know, one thing that you made me realize was, how important it is to, clearly, say the words that you mean and not talk down to them as children. Right.
Absolutely.
And, actually I should do that. I haven't done that with them. I haven't said those words self-ownership, but I think I'm going to start. I like that idea.
Yeah. I mean, how much do you use it in conversations or your podcasts or, like when you're talking to other people or other adults, you know, and I don't know, I like the idea that they learn about, voluntarism at a very young age, you know, because this is what mama does. This is her principles and this, you know, don't do others harm and don't take their stuff, you know, and self-defense is a thing. And so I don't know, to me, it's like, if you explain it to them at a very young age, and even if they don't get it, like we were discussing, you just keep talking about it and it'll become second nature for them. It'll become a thing where they go, okay, yeah, this makes sense for me. And then they start to implement it in their own lives. So I would have loved if I had grown up with the concept of self-ownership.
I know. A lot of us, it's not the first thing in a typical traditional family environment.
No.
It's more like, this is the rules of the house and you're going to obey me, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
Crap like that. But I mean, as volunteers and anarchists, we really, I think, are raising a different sort of human being. Mm-hmm. And it's a challenge and it's not easy. It's, talk about exhaustive parenting. I think that's one of the most difficult things to do is to raise a child, an independent, free thinking child, because, they're not just going to listen to you. They're going to want an explanation, for everything, which is good. You know, it can get tiring after a while. You know, you ask the question, why? And you got to explain, but, you know, the more you dedicate yourself and you devote yourself to that, it's an investment for the future.
Absolutely. And that's one thing too, like I don't have all the answers and nobody does, you know, and my daughter will ask me questions, why this, why that, well, you know, and sometimes I'll get to a point where I'm like, you know what, Ro, I don't know the answer to that, you know, like we can go look it up or we can ask somebody else, but I don't know. And she'll get frustrated at me and she'll say, "No, mom, you do know, you know everything." I'm like, whoa, now, no, I don't know everything. I said, "Kid, I'm learning this whole journey too. Like I'm right there with you. Like this is, you know, I'm only been here 36 years, you know, and I'm trying to figure it out right now, you know?" So, but I like to teach them that I don't have all the answers, you know, that, nobody does. You know, and so, and that's important too for them to, if they're asking, one, that they learn to explore other resources for information, but then also that people, they can't rely on someone to know all the answers or give them all the information. So right. it teaches them to think about that a little bit more, which I think is valuable.
Yes, that's a really good point. That that's one thing that I hear Larkin Rose say a lot, which is people think that when they place their trust in an authority figure, let's say God or the Bible or the state or whatever, they think that you can just trust everything that. Whatever God says, whatever the Bible says, I'm going to do. But no, actually, that's not the case, because you had to make that decision to trust. So you're actually, you are making a decision. You're not handing everything over. You're the one that's making the decision, but the decision you're making is to obey everything, which is a kind of stupid decision.
Right. And that's where you get the order followers, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. Another topic that's kind of related to this, the self-ownership, is circumcision, and also ear piercing for girls, right? And my family, thankfully, did not circumcise us and understood how inhumane that would have been. But for some reason, ear piercings, maybe it's not as severe as circumcision, but still, I would make the argument that is a violation of self-ownership, even though it's not really permanent. Like you take the earrings out, it grows back, right? So it's just sad, when you see like infants in those earring shops, just crying, and they do that gun. And, oh man.
Well, and for what? It's for you, or it's for the parent. It's not for the baby.
Right,
doesn't want earrings.
Exactly.
The baby asks for earrings. I don't think so. Like,
exactly.
And so you're putting them through this process where, I've never understood that either. And it is heartbreaking, because I have seen that, I've witnessed that, walking by, and I'm like, and I always remember thinking, like, why would you put your kid through that? That's unnecessary. Yeah. And it is, I can't imagine, especially at infants, something like that, even though it's just your ears pierced, it's got to be a lot of pain. And for them, what's their scale of pain? They don't really know. And then also, they're there with their trusted care provider, and they have to sit through it, right? Like, their parent is right there holding them as that's happening. Right. So I don't know. I think that could be very traumatizing.
Yeah, definitely. So what are your views and your that of your family about on circumcision?
I didn't circumcise my son. I was very much against it. It took about 6 months to convince my ex, that we weren't going to circumcise our son. Mm-hmm. And that was through research, and, I used to teach childbirth education. So I actually would do about 4 weeks of childbirth education. And one of the nights I would take maybe an hour or two and go through circumcision and what the process is and, the benefits or, versus the risks and that sort of thing. So I had a lot of information. But funny enough, my ex was like, yeah, I don't know. You're telling me all this, but I'd like more information. So I actually connected with another guy who he's called an inactivist. Is that the
intactivist?
Intactivist. That's right. And who was Serbian, who was my ex is Serbian. So, they bonded, and sure enough, this guy sent my ex all the videos, all the links, everything that I showed my ex already. This guy did. But I think my ex needed to hear it from a different perspective. So we didn't circumcise. And then, my parents didn't say much. Family didn't say much. As with my whole life, they've always been like, what is she up to? What's going on? Okay, don't ask. Let her do her thing. When it comes to things like that, my parents don't ask too much. My mom would get upset if I did something different than she chose to do. And I think she saw that as a failure on her part, right? Like, so, well, why didn't you circumcise your son? Because I circumcised your brother. And I'm like, well, Mom, here's the research. This is the reason why we chose not to, and it's unnecessary, and it's his body. And she got upset about that, And so she actually stopped asking me questions about why I'm raising my kids, because it's been complete 180 from the way I was raised. And it's not, I'm not insulting her, but I'm just letting her know, like, why I came to this, because I educated myself, you know, and I went through and I made the decision. And especially since I see my child, you know, as another human, he's not just my kid. Like, he's somebody that is, should be respected. And if he ever wants to do anything to alter his body, that's on him. He can make that decision. I'm not going to do that for him, because who am I? You know, I don't have the right to do that. So, yeah. So my parents were confused, but, and then they understood it, but I think they went back into denial because I don't think they wanted to admit to the mistakes that they made, you know, so.
Yeah, the idea that, you know, we should, you know, call out our parents and, you know, say, you know, you did this to me and why, right. And, you know, you made a mistake. I could see why some people would want to do that as a form of purging and expressing yourself and all that on the path to healing. But after that, I think it can be counterproductive and harmful to continue blaming your parents for, you know, the way you came out. Because, you know, in one sense, they were doing what they thought was best, right, with the knowledge they had at the time. I mean, I don't think any parents are malicious, like intentionally, like, I want to make my child's life worse. Like, who thinks like that? Nobody thinks like that, right? So most parents, I think, genuinely want to help their kid, and they think that doing whatever, if saying in the to, I don't know, public school, sending them to, you know, circumcising, do, you know, spanking, you know, punishment, whatever. They think all that is good to produce a healthy, functioning human being. And a lot of
to
that.
To produce a citizen.
To produce a citizen, yeah. And all, mm-hmm. and we're saying no. You know, we're saying the complete opposite. So, yeah, it can be shocking. But yeah, so I you know, I've come to terms, and, you know, the blame game gets old, and it gets, you know, harmful to yourself. And it's just like, it's kind of like, you know, blaming other people for the way you are is kind of like wishing another person would die and you drink the poison.
Right? Absolutely.
You know?
I was just thinking of that quote. Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, you were? Okay. I remember that there's a documentary called American Circumcision that is going to come out next, this year. Yeah, I think maybe in the summertime. And Stefan Molyneux interviewed the filmmaker for that. And I contacted the guy after I heard that interview, and I said, like, I want to get you on. And so he said yes, but, you know, he wants to do it closer to the date, so we're going to see.
Sure.
But
oh,
I'm excited.
Awesome.
I'm excited.
That's awesome. I'm excited to see that documentary, too.
Yeah, this is just trailer, you know, a trailer and a couple of short videos on YouTube. But yeah, I'm so happy that now there a lot of more people are coming out and making documentaries and just more information coming out, because it's such a barbaric practice. Like, so many things that we as volunteers are exposing and just revealing that, you know, we don't have to continue doing things the way we've been doing it, because that's not a good enough reason. That's one of the worst reasons.
Right. Absolutely. Well, and that's one thing that my son's pediatrician, I had talked to her about it. She said that she's seen a decline in the rate of circumcision, because just in the last, I want to say 10 years is what her and I were discussing. And she was saying, like, people really don't do, it's not a go-to thing as much as it was, like, you know, back when, you know, we were kids and born, like, that was just what you did. You just went and had your son circumcised and you didn't think about it. But now more and more people, there's a lot more information out there. Websites, videos, the Intactivists, you know, there's a movement to educate, and there's a movement that really wants to change that barbaric practice, you know. And so I've talking to the pediatrician, she's noticed quite a decline, you know, in that. And a lot of it too, what I've noticed is that, what she had said is that, it costs extra. It costs a lot extra. Insurance has stopped covering it for the most part, or at least in Washington State. And she was saying that, you know, sometimes parents will make the decision just because it's going to cost too much money, which, okay, as long as you just didn't hurt your kid, if that's the reason, then fine. But, you know, I mean, there's various reasons as to the decline of circumcision. So, yeah.
Yeah. I would say one of the biggest reasons is, the rise of the digital age, right? The internet. And it's kind of interesting that so many people that I meet, actually, a lot of people that I hang out with, my homeschooling group, they are very critical of social media and the internet in general. We were talking about this recently at a conversation, and they were saying how, you know, it's a bad thing, especially social media, I guess, because it separates people, makes people distant, maybe the electronic stuff is bad for the brain, all that kind of stuff, but I think that it's just like, you know, Gutenberg's press, right? When
right.
you can mass produce information, how can that be a bad thing? You know, you want less options or more options? Which one do
right.
you want? You want basically
right.
socialism, or you want free market capitalism?
Right, right. Well, and then how many people do you connect with online? Like you and I, we haven't met in person.
Exactly.
But how long have we been talking? And how long? How many times a week are we talking on Telegram and having conversations and talking about what's going on with our children? And we've formed this friendship that's totally invaluable, and it's amazing. And then, oh, what do you know? Here's an idea for a podcast, you know? But it's like anything. It's a tool, you know? It can be good. It can be used for good or used for bad, you know? And people's perception of it, you know? A lot of screen time for your kids and that sort of thing, or screen time for adults. And, you know, there's arguments to be made on both sides of it, but, you know, and especially with the voluntarist and anarchist community, it's been amazing. I mean, the problem, my friend Mandy Silver, I remember her saying once, the problem with anarchists is distance. You know, a lot of us are like on Facebook and we've met and we talk and we interact, and then, but we're all over the place. We're all over the world. We're across the country, and yet we're able to build communities online and discuss things and like-minded theories and ideas, and then also encourage one another with podcasts, with projects, with promoting it, you know? And so, yeah, anyway, to hijack what you were saying, I think it's an incredible thing, you know, the age of information and the internet and, you know, what we're able to accomplish. So,
yeah, it's like, you know, people, it's so weird. It's like these people, their argument to me sounds like, I would rather wash my clothes by hand than put it in a washing machine.
Right.
That's what it sounds like to me when they say they hate the internet, you know?
Right.
Why? What's wrong with you? My God.
Right.
It's like, how many things have you learned online? How many communities have you joined? How many, like you said, how many people have you met online that you've never met in person, that you develop good, long-lasting friendships? It's an amazing thing. It's uniting the world. And I think the very fact that people love social media is testament to the idea that people want to connect. We don't want to disconnect. We want to connect with each other. That's the reason that social media is loved by so many people, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, to bring it around to children, let's say the idea of screen time, right, with kids. This is another interesting topic. We have an iPad, what is it, 2, and we got my smartphone, an iPhone, and then my wife has a little iPod. But the iPad is really theirs. And so, you know, in the morning they wake up and they watch a couple of videos, they play some games, then we leave, we go out for the day, and then we come back at night. It's like their way to calm down, relax, decompress. And, you know, I don't impose limits on them. My wife maybe a little bit more. But I think they do self-regulate in the sense that if you let them, you know, people say, well, if you're going to let them watch, they can watch all day. No, it doesn't really happen.
No,
like
they
that.
Get bored. They want to go do something else, you know, after a little while, I've noticed.
Right. And also, I don't know if this is like, this is representative of the entire gender. Probably not. But my daughter does not like watching the iPad much at all. Like, she watched a little bit, she'll get her fill, and then she's off to doing something else. Like, please, like, play dress up, and she puts on her gowns and her ballet and her different outfits, and she plays by herself. But my son, he really loves the iPad, especially games. He's really good at games. It's amazing. I see in his future, like, some kind of game developer. Like,
right.
Like, he's awesome, and these games are really hard.
Yep.
And he's just awesome. So I don't know if that's a male and female thing, because I don't know if you've seen this. This is one video that Julia Taransky made on her channel Brave the World. It's a 30-minute video called 50 Things That Are Different Between Men and Women.
Right.
I don't know.
No, I did see that. No.
Oh, that's such an awesome one. Basically tearing apart all these feminists.
I've mentioned that before.
Mm-hmm. I have mentioned it? Okay.
Yeah, because I think it was our discussion about feminism.
Yeah,
my favorite subject.
So, yeah, but it's just amazing how, you know, she was saying how, you know, boys tend to be attracted more towards fast-moving objects, you know, slightly more aggressive play, and girls tend to be more attracted to dolls and faces and warm colors and hugging and sharing.
Well, and that would make sense too, because you think back to like hunter gatherers, you know, and what, you know, what biologically, you know, like way back when a woman had a baby, you know, she was home in the cave or whatever with the baby, and being around, you know, and nurturing and caring and all that. And then the man went out and he was hunting, you know? And so of course your little boy is like interested in that fast moving stuff, right? Like there's that hunter mentality. And, you know, and I was thinking about that today with my kids. Like my daughter loves to be a little mom. You know, she likes to, play with her dolls, and my son loves his cars. Oh my gosh. He's such a boy. Like he loves his cars and his trucks and he's like so aggressive. But then my son will turn around and go get his baby doll. Cause he's got one and he wants to wear the baby. Like, because I always wore them as babies, and so he likes to wear baby dolls, and then my daughter will get the blocks out, and she's, like, building these crazy towers, and, like, I'm like, they should be in architecture, or get into architecture or something, like, that's interesting, and, you know, and it's interesting, like, they have these ideas that they naturally gravitate toward, like, you know, play things that to me seems natural to their gender, but then sometimes they'll switch it up and then they'll go back to it. But yeah, for the most part, like my daughter loves to dress up. Like in fact, we need to get our kids together.
I know, right?
We get along. My daughter loves dress up and dance. And my son is more into like also like the fast moving things. Oh my gosh. And that kid, he loves trains. He's obsessed with trains, you know? And, so yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah. So the feminist idea that, you know, first of all, that men and women are equal, which is completely idiotic, like biologically, like, come on. And then, and what was the other thing? Like, I don't know. It just seems like they just despise. Oh, yeah. The other thing is that the reason that girls like dolls is because they're programmed to by society, like, I don't know, the TV, commercials, billboards. That's why they like dolls, right? And the same thing for boys is what feminists say. The only reason they like cars and trucks and fighting figures is because they're programmed by society, by all these mediums to like those things. And so in this video, Julia Taransky made she quoted a study of infant, I think it was chimpanzees. And, you know, there was a male and a female infant, and they gave, you know, cars and a doll to the female, and the female took the doll.
Right.
And then same thing with the male, both of them, and he took the trains and the trucks and the cars.
Right,
isn't
exactly.
That amazing?
Right. It's not surprising. Doesn't surprise me at all.
So, I mean, yeah, so it's just, it's an amazing thing how deeply ingrained some of these attributes are. And, and another thing, you know, how I look at my son, I say, oh, he might be a game developer. You look at your daughter and you're like, oh, she might be an architect. And that's a nice thing to imagine. But, you know, they're like, well, if she wants to do that, she can do that. You know, if that makes her happy, but if not, that's fine too. You know,
right.
And I think that's something that parents, have to embrace also. It's like once they get to the college age, you know, so it's usually the parents dictating, all right, this is going to make money, this is going to make money, this is not going to make money.
Right. Well, and that's if they go to college. Like, you know,
yeah,
I
good point.
If my kid wants to go to college, go for it.
Right.
Honestly, I would encourage trade schools more than college,
exactly.
You know. But it's going to be up to them. And but I'm definitely not going to push for it. You know, that's something that, like, it seems like so many kids, they just, like, you get funneled from public school straight into another public school, essentially. You know, like, college is very much a prop by the government, you know, and I'm going through school right now. I'm working on my degree so I can transfer to acupuncture school. And the stuff that I read, these textbooks, by the government. I'm like, this is the stuff I remember reading about when before I dropped out of school, you know, in public school, like the stuff that they teach. It's not really that they're teaching anything. And you go through it, and you get this piece of paper. And I know some degrees can be valuable, but, you know, for the most part, all these kids are going to school because that's what they're supposed to do, right? Because you're told that you can't do anything unless you have a college degree, which is absolutely ridiculous. You know, I'm 36 years old, just now getting my associate's degree. I've had a very successful career as a doula and massage therapist and a childbirth educator, and want to be a midwife, you know? I mean, that's the thing is I really, as my kids get older, and what I love about my children, watching them grow, Danilo, is watching them become their own person. Like, it's just amazing to see these personalities develop. You know, I can't imagine thinking, well, I hope you do this one day. Like, I hope you, go down this career path, or I hope you do this. And I can't wait to see what they do with their lives, you know, especially when they grow up empowered, you know, to make their own decisions, and they grow up to be creative and to express their creativity. And, so anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. We are not central planning parents at all.
No.
And you know, yeah, that's one thing that people ask me as a homeschooling parent is that, what about college? What are they going to do? And like you said, maybe there won't even be college at that time. Like how fast are things changing and transforming right now? And institutions being rendered obsolete, and colleges and universities to me really signify, a barbaric relic of the past. You know, you gotta go to a big building with books and write stuff, or maybe bring your laptop and type whatever the guy is saying. And yet, how much information is available online?
How much money are, you know, people are going into hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt to get a degree, that's a house, or something,
right?
Like, what?
Yeah, that's the other thing, and which, again, probably leads me to believe that, you know, if it wasn't for those federal funds, would they even exist? You know? Does it – maybe they're what the federal government thinks of as too big to fail. Like, you know, they need –
which is always a good idea.
So what happens when you remove those federal funds and they can't charge these exorbitant tuitions? You know, things collapse, departments shrink, and, you know, people get laid off and – and so, yeah, so basically the idea is not to go to college, university. The way I see it, you know, I try to persuade people, you know, start a business, work somewhere that you want, whatever you want to work in, find a place to do a menial task in that job and work yourself up and learn the trade of the business. And you don't need a degree. You don't need any kind of permission. Like, just learn directly and use your skills and, you know, I mean, just do it the Agris way.
Absolutely. Well, and that's the thing too, is I've seen this in different studies, and I think Joel Salatin has said this, because he homeschooled his children. Homeschooled children tend to become entrepreneurs at the age of 14, around that age.
Right.
They start to become old enough to understand transactions and money and working and creating and doing things. And, you know, if my children become entrepreneurs, that would be the best thing, I think. You know, and if they want to do something else, awesome, I'll encourage them. But to be an entrepreneur, you know, you don't have to go to school for that, you know, essentially. Like, you can just, you know, create a product, or, you know, I mean, and I always think about, you know, like the Wright brothers, you know, they didn't have a pilot's license, one. So they didn't need the government to, like, help them with aviation. And they also, they didn't go to school for aviation, right? But then what did they do? You know, so it's like the world's our children's oyster, essentially. Like, they really could do anything. And if they've got parents like us behind them, to encourage that and help them to grow with that, you know, how amazing is their generation going to be, you know, if there's more parents like us, voluntarist, anarchist, peaceful parents, how nurtured and supportive are these kids growing up, and that then they can turn around and create something, you know, instead of following orders, you know, essentially. So
of course, I mean, you know, that's one of the reasons, you know, you're talking about you know, homeschooling parents being young entrepreneurs. That's one of the reasons why I hesitate to look far into the future and think, you know, what are we going to do if they want to go to college? Because that is so far, and there are so many things that can happen from here until then. That's such a ridiculous thing to worry about.
Absolutely.
Like, it's such a my wife like worries about things like that. I'm like, why are you even worried about this? They're going to be fine. Like, they're learning. I mean, what's more important than them being happy right now, being autonomous, independent, and learning on their own? You know, they're going to make it. Whatever they do, they have no barriers, you know? Like we, in the childhoods that you and I experienced, we had many more barriers to overcome to become because we couldn't do the things that we wanted to do because we had to do things everyone else wanted us to do.
Right.
So I'm not worried one bit about their future.
Absolutely.
Because when kids are left in freedom to do and pursue and learn the things they want, success is the only option.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, and that makes sense, you know, and all the more reason to respect them and treat them as humans, you know, and not as your property, essentially.
Yes. Respect their decisions. Respect how they want to have their body, you know, and teach them basic morality. You know, we'll discuss more about morality in another episode. But yeah, so this is, you know, the importance of self-ownership, that's where it starts, you know.
Absolutely.
It starts with taking responsibility for your actions, understanding the consequences of your actions, and just like your daughter, you know, now she learns how fast the hair is going to grow.
Right.
So it's a great learning experience. Is there any final words you want to finish up with before we wrap up?
I don't think so.
Anyone who's saying, why do I have to respect my daughter? She's only two. She's only three. What does she know about the world? She has to learn it from me. What would you say to somebody like that?
What are you teaching her if you're not teaching her that you respect her? If you don't respect her, then she's going to learn that no one respects her.
Right.
Because especially as parents, you know, we're their go-to guides in life, and they should be getting their source of love and instruction from home. And if they're not respected by you, then they can be easily taken advantage of by anyone else out there in the world and make really bad decisions.
Yeah, definitely. I heard, I don't know if you told me this or somebody else told me, that raising a child peacefully and being a parent, you know, being an authority, but not like coming from a position of power, just like explain things to them because you have more knowledge, right? And you want them to have the knowledge. So it's kind of like you being in a foreign country where you don't speak the language, you're not familiar with the customs, and you have a guide. And the guide leads you around and explains things to you.
Right.
And he's not talking down to you. He's not superior. He just knows more about that particular area. So he's trying to help you. And so I think that's a great analogy for what peaceful parenting means to me. We're trying to guide our children to becoming fully autonomous human beings. So.
Right, absolutely.
So awesome. First episode of the Non-Aggressive Parenting Podcast. I'm very excited about this. We're going to be doing a lot more subjects and topics about everyday life of a radical, revolutionary, peaceful parent. and maybe even we can start a Patreon, accept some donations for this. I think that would be great. Maybe some kind of PayPal. We got to figure that out. But probably definitely a Bitcoin, because you know, we all need help. We all need monetary compensation for all the hard work and effort we put into this activism. We're trying to make the world a better place. It's not easy. It's not free. Although it is free to consume this, but it was done with opportunity cost, right? We had to choose this over other people. She had to get a babysitter. She's already paying right there.
I did.
So there's always cost to everything you do. So if anyone wants to help us out, please feel free to do so. We will set something up. Hopefully, perhaps by the time this airs, we will. but yeah, wonderful conversation, Melissa. So we will see everyone in the next episode. So this is Danilo and Melissa from the Non-Aggressive Parenting Podcast, wishing all of you have a wonderful day. Take care. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this content and would like to see more of it, please feel free to donate and help me interview other fascinating people. You can do so through Patreon. That's patreon.com/peacefulanarchism to help me out. $1 a show is all I ask. If you feel so inclined to donate more, please feel free. It will only assist me in spreading the message of freedom and voluntarism that much farther and that much more efficiently. You can also donate to my Bitcoin. My Bitcoin address is in the description to my videos, as well as on my website, peacefulanarchism.com. And while you're on my site, there's a donate button to donate through PayPal. If you prefer to donate through PayPal, you can do so with that. But Patreon is a little bit easier for content creators, as you can set up a recurring donation if you so desire. Also, while you're on my website, peacefulanarchism.com, please feel free to sign up, enter your email address, sign up for my newsletter, and you'll receive updates every time I post something, a video or an interview. I do not send out any spam. Or you can also follow me on Facebook under facebook.com/peacefulanarchism or facebook.com/DaniloCuellar3, I believe. DaniloCuellar3. So either one of those methods, if you are able to donate, I would be most appreciative. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you have a magnificent day.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Cell 411, because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.